All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we are looking here at the military campaign of Kettle Elmer and Alliance as they go in to deal with the rebel vassals of the Jordanian kings. And we see their strategy in regards to taking care of the issue of rebellion, those who may even try in the future or think about refusing to pay proper tribute, etc., to Chedorlaomer. As he goes in, he approaches the area from the north, and his route to the Jordanian Valley is a roundabout route. Again, however good my map is, how well you can see it. This colored region is more or less looking at the area of Israel. Sea of Galilee's here. Dead Sea's here. Sodom and Gomorrah is going to be around here. Jordan River comes down this way, empties into the Dead Sea, Salt Sea, Sea of Salt. You have the plain area as well as the deep valleys of Jordan coming off of that. Chedorlaomer comes in from the north. As we saw, the first thing he does is he takes on the biggest, the baddest of the land. That is the race of giants. Here known as Raphaim, Zuzim, and Amim. Deals with them first. This is in the northern, northwest area. Comes in, subdues in, cuts off any potential retreats in that general area, seaward. As we saw, comes around, does a sweeping action towards the Gulf of Suez, Aqaba, encroaching even to the area of Egypt. At the same time, coming in Mount Zir, the Horites, taking care of them, and then regathering, regrouping at Kadesh Barnea. And then they take off, and they come over to the west of the Dead Sea, as well as some to the east, and deal with the Amalekites and the Amorites in that general vicinity. The Amorites are commonly associated with the Canaanites, so they come into the land of Canaan, to a certain degree at least. They are one of the list of peoples pre-Israelite occupation of the land in the Transjordan Valley. That is point 36 where we left off, Exodus 23:23. I find things like this in the Bible interesting. It shows that these weren't just these tribal people as the cosmos likes to picture people of antiquity going out and bushwhacking and all that kind of other stuff. They had organized militaries, very adept at what they did, and planned things out. These world rulers became world rulers not because they were idiots, because they knew what to do. They had military power, superiority, etc. And to see this strategy, obviously, psychologically, the first attack of the first three race of giants is designed to put the fear of men. Nobody can stop us. They come in, and now they're surrounding the five Jordanian kings otherwise, and in so doing, cutting off all access. And this includes going up to the land of Canaan, to area of the Amorites, Moabites, Exodus 23:23, for my angel will go before you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, etc. Under the conquest generation, Numbers 13:29. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites, Jebusites, and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea, by the side of Jordan. 21:13-25. From there they journeyed and camped on the other side of the Arnon, which is in the wilderness that comes out of the border of the Amorites, for the Arnon is the border of Moab, between Moab and the Amorites. 21:25, and Israel took all these cities, and Israel lived in all the cities of the Amorites, in Heshbon and in all her villages, etc. The area of Hazazon Tamar, means sandy country of the palms, is identified with Engedi in 2 Chronicles 20, verse 2. Then some came and reported to Jehoshaphat, saying, a great multitude is coming in against you from beyond the sea, out of Aram, and behold, they are in Hazazon Tamar, that is Engedi. This is a settlement that's on the western side of the Dead Sea, mostly southwestern. The Dead Sea, you have cliff areas kind of surround it a certain degree. Probably in this, whatever it's going to do. All the scribbling here. In that particular area, around there somewhere. If we're off a couple of miles, you have to forgive me. We're only a few thousand years apart here, so. So, what we see here, they have completely surrounded the entire area and region of the five kings, including north, west, south, east, into the Malachite area, the Amorites, including even the southeastern part of the Dead Sea area. So 39, in the coalition's movements, they have secured their flank and now encircle the intended prey of the five kings. 40, as a result, all outside assistance to the Jordan Valley have been cut off. Obviously, these kings were wealthy. To hire mercenaries to fight on their behalf would not be unheard of, uncommon, to fight along with their own military. Chedorlaomer has made sure that whatever they had, that's what they're stuck with. No more help is going to come to their direction, as well as any idea of trying to retreat, outmaneuver them, outflank them, or something of that nature has also been remedied. So 41, the details and magnitude of the campaign are provided to us as it will be contrasted to the military blessing that will later be afforded Abram by Yahweh in verses 13 through 16. This powerful military organization has done and wreaked all this havoc, has conquered all these people and getting ready to rout out the Jordanian kings And we'll see essentially an army of 300 plus under God's provision and guidance and protection go in and rout the entire military organization otherwise as a favor in return. So it just goes to show this section, one of the things that we'll point out, it doesn't make any difference numerically, otherwise, generally speaking, in superiority of numbers, technology, things of this nature, is who God is behind, who He's not behind, who will end up being victors ultimately in regards to conflicts in this world. All right? In verses 8 through 10, then, we had the rout of the Western kings. The Western kings being the Jordanian kings. And the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, came out. You have the vowel consecutive with the cal verb, imperfect third masculine singular, a verb translated to go out, come out, went out, yatsa, yatsa. It's in the singular, in spite of the fact that you have five kings with their military organization in view. In the Hebrew, that's what's called a collective singular. That means they went out as one. And then you have the same construct for each of the identifications of the kings in their area. That construct is, first you had a common masculine singular construct of the noun melek, king, M-E-L-E-K. First, Saddam, Sodom, transliterated. Same construction, wow, conjunction, melek. Then the next one, transliterated, Amora, Gomorrah, A-M-O-R-A-H. Wow, conjunction, Melek, Admah, A-D-E-M-A-H. Wow, conjunction, Melek, in the construct of Tisaboim, T-S-E-B-O-I-Y-M. Wow, conjunction, Melek of Bela, king of Bela, B-E-L-A. Then we are told by the narrator, Moses, that that is the same Bela as a name pre-Zoar. That is Zoar. The pronoun, third feminine singular, he, H-I-Y, Zoar, T-S-O-A-R, to Zoar. And they arrayed, or arranged, for battle against them in the valley of Siddim. Vowel consecutive, our verb, cal, imperfect third masculine plural, translated arrayed, is Arak, A-R-A-K, to arrange, set in order, in their proper military profile for defense here. Themselves together, the Donin, as they have unified their military forces. You have the preposition eth with the third masculine plural suffix, eth, themselves together. For battle, our noun here for war or battle, armed conflict, common feminine singular absolute, melekama, M-I-L-E-C-H-A. Hello. C-H-A, M-A-H, I must have pushed a little button. God doesn't need to test me. I test myself. Jeez. For battle, war, same word we saw in verse 2. In the valley of Siddim, preposition bait. Our noun for valley here is emek, E-M-E-Q. Definite article, proper noun, Siddim, S-I-D-D-I-Y-M. And then we are told whom they are set against, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, Amphrel, Arioch, four kings against five. You have the preposition F repeated, E-T-H, here translated against. Then Chedorlaomer, transliterated. And again, we see the same pattern here, more or less. Melech, king of Elam. Elam, E-Y-L-A-M. Vowel conjunction. Then the next name, king's name, title. T-I-D-E-A-L. Melech of Goim, which means nations, G-O-I-Y-M, vowel conjunction. Then Amraphel, Hamraphel, Hammurabi, however you may want to refer to him, all correct. A-M-E-R-A-P-H-E-L. Melech of Shinar, also known as Babylon, S-H-I-N-A-R, area of Mesopotamia. Vowel conjunction. Nix, king's name's Arioch, A-R-E-Y-O-W-K. Melech of Elasar, E-L-L-A-S-A-R. Four kings against five. You have first the adjective, masculine, singular, absolute, or number four. Ereba'a, Areba'a, A-R-E-B-B-A-A-H. Then in the Hebrew you have your noun for kings, Melech, in the plural. Against is your preposition F, E-T-H. We saw earlier, definite article, the five, literally in the Hebrew. Four kings against the five. Definite article, or adjective, cardinal adjective, masculine singular, number five, Kamishasha. C-H-A-M-I-S. Give me a break. I-S-H-S-H-A-H. Verse 10. Give a description of the topography and the results of the battle. Verse 10. Now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits. Vowel conjunction, our noun for valley, again, is emek, common masculine singular construct, E-M-E-Q. A definite article, Siddim, transliterated. was full of tar pits is literally the common feminine plural noun construct, repeated twice, be'er, B-E-E-R, be'er, be'er. Pits of, or wells of, wells of, wells of. Tar, bitumen is the Hebrew, hence the double noun, full of pits. Our noun for tar or bitumen, common masculine singular absolute, Kemar, C-H-E-M-A-R, We saw back in Moses' reference to the Tower of Babel in 11:3, in the construction of the tower, used mortar rather than tar. And the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell unto them. And on the surface here, it looks like they both found their demise drowning in tar. You have the wow consecutive, calum perfect, third masculine, plural. First, the verb to flee, nous, N-U-S. And they fled, kings, Melech, proper nouns of Sodom, and wow conjunction, of Gomorrah. Again, you have a collective singular here, looking at the fact that they were hanging together pretty much in this thing. That's what it pictures. Amora. Let's see. A-M-O-R-A-H. And they fled and they fell into them. Wow, consecutive, calum perfect, third masculine plural. Our word to fall or drop down is nafal. N-A-P-H-A-L. We'll deal with that word. There, in that area, in the tar pits, adverb sham in that place, S-H-A-M. But those who survived fled to the hill country. Wow, conjunction. The one surviving literally is the participle with the definite article, nifal, passive, masculine plural absolute, sha'ar, S-H-A-A-R, the ones remaining or surviving, to the hills. That's where they took off to. You have the common masculine singular absolute, har, hills or mountain, region, cliff area, higher elevation, if you will, H-A-R. They fled, cal, perfect, third common plural, final word, again, nous, I didn't transliterate it, N-U-S. Rereading verses 8 through 10. And the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Adma, and the king of Zeboim, the king of Bela, that is Zoar, went out. And they arrayed for battle against them in the valley of Siddim. Against them is verse 9, against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goim, Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against the five. Now the valley of Siddim, verse 10, was full of tar pits. The kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell into them. But those who survived fled to the hills. All right, now this is verses 8 through 10. 1. Now some view verses 1 and 2 as one battle initially subjugating the western kings, with verses 8 through 10 indicating a second battle. Some commentaries take it that way. That actually verses 1 and 2 is saying that the kings, the four kings of the eastern kings of Shinar, etc., made war with Bera and the five kings of the Jordanian Valley as the initial battle to subjugate them, of which then they had to pay tribute, which they did for 12 years before they rebelled in the 13th year. 2, if that's true, if true, then this dates verses 1 and 2 some 4 years before Abram entered Canaan, since some 14 years have passed since then. And we know that 14 years have passed, verse 4 or 5, excuse me, and the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him came and defeated them. Three, as noted in verses 1 through 4 in our analysis, Genesis 16, 2 through 3 provides only a 10-year window for all these events to have occurred. If you take the chronology markers that we have in the Bible for the immediate context, we know that Abram left Haran back in chapter 12 at 75 years of age. The next A chronological marker is in Genesis 16, where Sarai schemes under Operation Hagar. And that tells us clearly Abram had been in Canaan 10 years. So chronologically, the markers in the Bible are this 10-year period of which all the events that we saw occur from 12, 4 and following through chapter 15, basically, occurs within this 10-year window. So for, in spite of, and I generally don't argue over split ends like this, and it's not meant to that, but the most natural reading based on what we have in the scripture is point four. It is most natural to read verses 1-4 as a preface with verses 5 and following, given the details of the war, knowing that we have these chronological markers otherwise. So if you just picked it up and read it, really the most natural reading, they made war, now we're given the details of the war. And that's the Hebrew way, the way they usually address things too, whereas we'll get details and then we'll summarize. The Hebrew likes to summarize first and then they give the details. So it also follows the Hebrew way of thinking to look at the first four verses as a preface or a general summation of this conflict. And then the details follow. So 5 verse 8, now moving on, indicates that the kings of the five cities had obviously heard the news of the eastern king's campaign recorded in verses 5 through 7. How could they not? No, they didn't have computers or telephones back then, but news still traveled by way of mouth, couriers, and people on foot, etc. And for a military campaign of this size in that general region, and we're not talking about an area the size of the United States that they have to cover, a fairly small geographical region, obviously they would be hearing what's going on. They would be astute. They would have their people out, spies and things of this nature, bringing back news consistently in that regard. So they've obviously heard the news, and they can see that it's getting ready to happen, and now they are preparing themselves to the best of their ability. 6, news from the surrounding regions would be steady, and the direction of the campaign would leave little doubt that they were on the hit list. Yeah, it started at north. What, they beat the hell out of those giants? Now they're heading south, and they're surrounding us? Defecation probably became part of their vocabulary at that point in time in their history. If you don't know what that word means, ask somebody, but after class. 7, after conquering the surrounding areas, protecting their flank and cutting off outside assistance, or escaping from the five cities, the Chedorlaomer alliance attacked now their main target. This is truly their main target. But we see the destruction and the upheaval they cause on the way for all intents and purposes to squelch any other potential attempts, if you will, and to expand, as I envision it, his empire en route. 8, now while the battle is brief in narration, details can be gleaned from the language and context. Obviously, we recognize the brief narration of it here in just a couple of verses, as, if you will, picturing just how easily these five kings were routed. It was, at this point in time, really not that much effort on Chedorlaomer's alliance in part. But in spite of how brief it is to picture that, there are other details that we can glean from it to give us a little bit more of a visual of what occurred. 9, verse 8 indicates that first that the five western kings united to provide a defense of their cities. I've brought some of this out in our parsing. 10, the collective singular of the cow verb came out, y'all saw. And the use of the definite article in the reference to the five kings, Ha Kamishasha, that looks at a unit, see, one, the five kings. Ending verse 9 signifies that they combined their individual forces into one. 11, the strategy implies producing an army with numerically superior numbers to the best of their ability. 12, that the Chedorlaomer army has lost troops due to an extended campaign is logical. So, obviously, militarily, this makes sense. They're out here, yeah, they're beating these people, but obviously they're going to lose troops on the way. So we need to join forces to protect ourselves, come together and have one army and build up as many people as numbers in our army numerically as we can and hope for some superiority, if not some at least equality in that regards. So 13, and the five kings then arrayed or arranged Iraq, their troops strategically to counter an attack. The picture here is that they do not go on the offensive, but they establish a defensive posture. And so they set out their troops to try to defend their cities, their region, as best as possible. 14, now that Chedorlaomer's forces were last active in the area of Hesazon Tamar, which is Engedi, as I brought out, which is the southwest part of that Dead Sea. I showed you on the map. If you look at the map, it would have been on the left down towards the southern end. And we know they went around on the western side to the Amorites, etc. But their last scene there, with the central command south in Kadesh, in verse 7, we might assume an attack from west, southwest of the defenses coming in from that area. All right, this is kind of an interesting thing, I thought. 15, we know from Genesis 13, 10, 11, and 12 that the Jordan Valley was predominantly an open plain, seen in the use of the Hebrew word kakar, which means disc. An oval, flat, oval area. And it is translated with the same word, valley, that we see now in regards to the Valley of Siddim in the English, in those verses. 16, however, the topography closer to the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, also known as Siddim, is here described as a valley by the Hebrew noun emek, E-M-E-Q, which means to be deep, or a deep vale, ravine, here in Genesis 14, in our passage, verses 3, 8, and 10. And even today, obviously, at the time, the topography was different. We understand. That's before God came in and obliterated this area and turned it into a wasteland for their evil vice. Even today, you can see that from the Dead Sea area, more of a flat topography until you get further south, and then it goes down into very deep ravines, a drop-off, and a narrow type of deep, narrow type of geography in that regards. So 17, what's this suggesting for us? Does it give us a little bit more clear outlook in regards to their defensive measures? Yes, it does, I think. 17, this suggests that the Western kings set up their defenses, giving their troops cover in the deeper recesses, closer to Siddim, the Sea of Salt, to ward off attacking armies having to approach them on flat ground. As the predominantly, you would have open plain fields around you, and then you have the ravines more or less as you would get closer to where the water runoff, etc., would be in that respect. So 18, while higher ground is generally a tactical advantage, Most of the time, if you can get to higher ground, you had the military advantage. However, on a flat plain, ditches or ravines give an element of protection and surprise. You got hills around you, yeah, that's what you want to try to grab a hold of. But if it's flat, you know, you're fighting in Kansas, you know, you're not going to find a real high ground to get up to try to defend or protect yourself. In that case, then what's your best protection in a natural topography or terrain is to look for low-lying areas. So this is what I see the difference in regards to these terms being used. It gives us a hint in regards to, okay, we're going to protect our area. They got to come in on open ground. It's flat. Put our armies in these ravines and let them come on, and then we got cover. And we can also use an element of surprise in regards to any attack that may come in that regards. So, take it or leave it. That's what I see out of this. 19, now with this setting, we then had the armies of the four kings against the five. Again, our four kings. One, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. Two, Tidal, king of Goim, the nations. Three, Amraphel, Hammurabi, king of Babylon, Shinar. Four, Arioch, king of Elasar, against the five kings, Bera from Sodom. Two, Bersha from Gomorrah. Three, Shinab from Admah. Four, Shemember from Zeboim. And fifth, finally, our unnamed king, Bela, which is also known as now Zoar. Unnamed king, again, that one just stuck out to me like a sore thumb, too. Why didn't you name this king? You would have known. You knew all these other kings. Because he wasn't included in regards to the reputation of these other four kings of being that evil. to be supporting this kind of vice, etc., in that particular region. And hence, Zoar was spared by God. And so he's not associated for all eternity with Bera, Bersha, Shinab, and Shemember being the pro-homosexual rulers. See? Anyway, again, take it or leave it. I love this kind of stuff. God just takes care of every detail. Yeah. So anyway, 20. Chedorlaomer now has a list of eastern kings, acknowledging the Edomite, also known as the Cuterite empires, at the time. So, whereas in contrast to verse 1, he was third on the list, as Moses, the narrator, establishes first the general time period that his readers would readily recognize during the time of Hammurabi. Now he is listed first on the list, as he indeed is the ruling king of the empire at the time, as you would expect him to be in any type of historical listing otherwise. So 21, in spite of any advantage to numbers or tactics, as they may have been able to plan them out, the fate of the five kings was no better than any of their predecessors falling to the Chedorlaomer campaign. It did not work one bit. Just goes to show God's after you. You might as well bend over and kiss yourself goodbye, so to speak. 22. The brevity of narrative again emulates the quick and decisive victory of the Eastern Alliance. It emulates just how fast it occurred. 23, the lines of western defense, the Jordanian kings, broke and everyone fled, our term nous, used twice, looking to escape the onslaught. And you can almost see Monty Python doing the film, run away, run away! You know, here they come. By the way, I think there's some interesting things going on in history right now in regards to Great Britain. If you know anything about prophecy in the book of Daniel, the lion stands up like a man and takes on a heart. And they're breaking away from the European Union. right now in front of us. Now, how all this plays out at this point in time in history, I don't know. I've always understood that passage to actually happen during the period of tribulation, but maybe that's something that we can make a little adjustment on. But stay tuned. This is a very exciting time right now. And they decided, no, we don't want to be part of this new world order over here anymore, more or less. We want to be independent, autonomous, nationally identified as a peoples, see. And to shut down all the open immigration borders that the new worlders and great merchants are trying to impose on all nations. But anyway, didn't mean to get off into current events, but it just, my mind, God reminded me, so I threw it out there. Monty Python, that's why I thought of England. That makes sense now. Those Brits, their sense of humor is cool. 24, as it was, this particular area now, the valley was full of tar pits. 25, certain geology has petroleum oozing to the surface and can then be dug out. Hence, we have pits of tar, literally in the Hebrew, Be'er Kamar. Be'er Kamar. 26, now commentators are surprised that the story would have the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah falling into, as is translated, the tar pits, and so perishing on the surface is what it looks like. Yet, verse 17, as we get down there, has the king of Sodom reappear. You get to, here they, it tells that they fell into the tar pits. In verse 17, king of Sodom, along with Melchizedek, go out and receive Abraham after his route of the eastern kings. So what's going on there? 27, the apparent contradiction disappears once it is understood that the verb fell, our verb nafal, can also refer to a voluntary lowering of oneself. Example 28, such as is used in Genesis 24:64, where Rebekah dismounted, that's how it's translated there, from the camel. She, on her own, got off the camel. It's our same word, nafal, 24:64. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted, nafal, from the camel. 29, the verb can also mean to, quote, settle, end quote, or even, quote, flee to run or hide, or to simply settle down. Genesis 25:18, and they settled, that's our word, nafal, from Havilah to Shur. Ishmael and his people, which is east of Egypt. And then Jeremiah 38:19, we see it used there. Then King Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, I dread the Jews who have fled, literally gone over to the Chaldeans, our word nafal, unless they give me over into their hand and they abuse me. Turn traitor on him, turn on him, whatever, in that regards. So we see the word has nuances of use and doesn't always mean just fail, as it might be understood commonly. So 30, it appears that at least two of the western kings attempted to hide in the tar pits to escape capture. More than appears, that's what they did. Both the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah, Bera and Bersha, they saw what was happening. There is no support leading their troops. they turned Britain real quick. Run away, run away. And they found tar pits and they lowered themselves into them to hide, to get away from the enemy. So 31, others that survived the onslaught fled to high ground, as there are steep slopes adjacent to the Dead Sea Basin. Others of the armies that to get away from the attack, they took and then tried to get out through the high country around them, hill country, to get away and escape becoming casualties of war or POWs at best. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to these things in Jesus' name. Amen.